Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the HPE Quick Tips Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Charlie Rizzuto. Well, here we are, part two of our youth sports conversation with our panel of experts. If you haven't listened to part one, my suggestion is that you pause this right here, go back and listen to part one so you know what we covered before you listen to this episode. If you did listen to part one, I gave you the first question for this episode during the outro music, so let's pick it up right where we left off last time. All these things that we're talking about and your experiences, have youth coaches become an endangered species? Like, are they doing these things? Are they actually coaching kids? Are they actually teaching life skills? Has the line between being demanding when appropriate and being demeaning, which is never appropriate, become blurred? Because I honestly write a decent amount, and it's always in relation to health or physical education. But at the beginning of the summer, I almost wrote a piece on coaches and walking around these tournaments and just hearing, like some of you have mentioned, the interactions on the sideline with kids, like yelling, pick it up. Yeah, I'm trying. Tell me how. Like, help me actually pick it up. Don't just yell for me to do it, because I'm trying to do it. So have youth coaches become an endangered species? Are youth coaches doing these things? Has the line between demanding and demeaning become blurred? Like, all of that stuff.
That's coaching right there. I think, 4 years ago, you know, we got a new head coach at Pace, and I was fortunate enough to stay on with him, and he taught me a lot about being a coach. Most notably, you know, what you said, you can't just yell, pick it up. You know, that's not coaching. That's not offering instruction. That's not teaching. You have to offer instruction. You have to give advice. You have to give direction. It has to be focused. It has to be, you know, succinct. It has to be clear enough to be understood by the person you're telling it to. And I think at the youth level, I think that's kind of hard. I think when you look at, you know, where are the best coaches coaching, would you say? You know, a lot of them, if you're a really good coach, you're probably at the top of your game somewhere coaching, you know, whether it's a really good high school or, you know, a professional program or, you know, a college program. You know, there's not as many in the youth programs today. And what you're getting is, what I'm seeing is a lot of young college kids who are coaching to make some extra money, or parents who are coaching because no one else is there, but there's not enough people that are invested in actually what it takes to being a coach. And it's exhausting. You know, being a coach is hard. Dealing with kids is not something easy. It's rewarding. Yes, it's fun. Yes. But, you know, there's a lot of stuff you have to wade through to get to the fun parts. And if you're not invested and you're not willing to put the time and effort forth, you know, no one's going to get anything out of it. You're going to be frustrated as a coach. The kids are going to be frustrated as players. There's not going to be learning. There's not going to be development, you know. So I think you have to invest the time. And I think exactly what you said, tell me how you would like me to do that. I think that's an excellent point.
So Meredith, I would love to throw this to you. And then Justin, I would love for you to come in right after. As facilitators, as people that are put in charge of the development of kids. And again, when I use the word development, I'm not just talking about skills, but you're in charge of the development of a child in some way, shape, or form. You don't go home with them because you're not their parent, but the time that you have with them is vitally important to their development, and the responsibility that you're given to try and develop kids with this great tool of sport. How do we do it? What do we do? Dr. Whitley.
I think a lot more education. Right. I think one of the biggest challenges is that many times there isn't the support system that's needed. And so when coaches begin coaching, or maybe they've been coaching for a long time and they start with a new team or a new league or a new system, you know, maybe there's some initial required trainings and education courses they have to go to. But many times those focus, you know, on the physical side, they focus on the safety side, they focus on those pieces, and perhaps not the social emotional skills. You know, how do you build those? How do you, you know, teach a player how, as we were talking about, how to do certain things? And how do you create a climate within your sports program that hopefully leads to winning, but, you know, more importantly, ensures that the athletes, especially the younger that they are, that they feel supported and they have fun and they're enjoying and learning the sport and they're learning, you know, different life skills along the way also. And I think it all comes back to, we need much more support for coaches early on in their careers or in their volunteer capacity, and perhaps some requirements in terms of, you know, the educational expectations. So going to specific classes, maybe having a mentoring component, supervision, you know, different things like that, that could be incredibly helpful. I think a challenge though, is that many times people who are doing this are, they're already very busy, right? And so how do you, in a field where there is a much greater need than there is a number of people who are able to fill these positions, how do you add more expectations and more time and more hoops to jump through in order to coach?
Justin, before you go, so we were talking about like that, the focus being on winning and redirecting, and just to kind of piggyback on something that Dr. Whitley alluded to. So one of the things that I ask my kids is like, define a successful season. Like, what does it mean? And I don't remember where I heard this, but once I heard it, I fell in love with it. They and they talked about like a county championship and all that type of stuff. In one way, that would be successful. Right. Absolutely. That would be a success if we hung a banner, right? Because when we talk about winning, we talk about hanging banners and things like that. And you'll always leave your mark and things of that nature when we do discuss winning. But a successful season is when it's over. Did you miss it? Did you miss going to practice every day? Did you miss being coached by the coaches that you had? Did you miss hanging out with your teammates and practicing with your teammates and working hard with your teammates? If you miss all of that, whether we win a county championship or not, if you miss all of that stuff when the season's over, the season was a success.
Can I jump in right there?
Oh, yeah.
Just to piggyback off that, I love that. And I think that, unfortunately, and this kind of takes us another route, and so maybe we'll come to this later, but athletes are playing single sports so often year round now, they don't even get a chance to miss it, right? And so they're, you know, playing their sports all year round, and it becomes more like a job than that they enjoy and look forward to it, and that they do actually miss it. And so if they finish a wonderful season and they have this great team, they don't have that chance to sit back and miss the sport and miss the team and miss the experience because they've jumped right into the next, you know, playing AAU ball or playing club ball or whatever it is. And so they don't have that opportunity to miss it, which I think is a huge shift in youth sports.
Yeah, I mean, we can jump to that conversation if you want, Charlie, because I agree with everything Meredith said. I'm not sure how much I have to add to it as far as, you know, the youth coaches. And, you know, I notice, at least in the town program, not the club scene, that oftentimes it's just a volunteer father that's out there and he's devoting his time, often after a long day of work, where, you know, which may have brought some frustrations of the day or, you know, just all the pressures that surround people on a day-to-day basis. So it's a sense of we're willing to help, but you know what's needed. So to get back to Meredith's point, it's education, it's information, it's some sort of mentoring, and I think short of that, it's going to be difficult to sort of change the shape and trajectory of that, because you know people are volunteering their time and they want to be helpful, but they may not have the skill set or the knowledge to be able to bring to the players, bring to the athletes, something that's going to treat that social and emotional component as well as the physical component, you know, that's going to just make them a successful individual and a person and a human being more than just a successful athlete. And I think going back to some of the conversations and points that everybody's brought up, you know, that probably all begins with having a value system in place for the team and finding a way to make each and every individual player feel valuable. I think that's the only way that they're going to miss it, and despite the fact that they play year-round, which I agree with, and that's not that may be detrimental to the idea of missing the game. If you felt like you were a part of something and you felt valued, even if you turn right around and have a similar experience the very next day, you'll still remember feeling valuable, especially at a young age. I think that's what most young people are seeking in a lot of ways, just to feel valued and to feel important and to feel like they're a part of something and contributing to something. And too oftentimes you see young kids marginalized because they may not contribute to a win. And I think John opened the conversation with the whole idea of retention rates and how so often kids are just falling out of sports by the time they're 12, 13 years old. And that's a shame. And I would argue that, you know, I don't know, I wouldn't pretend to know what the individual reasons are, but in general, if you feel valued in a certain arena, it's very, very hard to leave that arena. So at some point, they probably didn't feel like they could contribute or had any value.
Yeah, I think that's a really, really good way to word it. If you feel valued, it's really hard to leave that. I do want to jump into specialization. And I don't know, maybe, you know, Meredith and then Chris, maybe the two of you could take the top end of this one. Specialization doing to youth sports as a whole and to the youth athletes specifically.
Okay. I was just trying to find my microphone here. Click it on there. the specialization is, let's see where I could start with this one. I'll give you the example right off the bat. We have an incoming camp for our ninth graders for the football team. And you see it every year. Kid comes in and you're just, wow, look at this kid. Nobody could tackle him. Nobody, like, he's faster than everybody. And 2 years later, he comes up to varsity and it's, wow, what happened? You know, his body changed. His work ethic changed. His interest, you know, off the field. Maybe he wasn't in the weight room. You know, so things change, you know. I watched it with my kids, and the tough part as a parent is you do get caught in that situation where, oh, what do you mean you're not doing that tournament? Or what do you mean you're not going to go to that training session? Or you're not going to, you know, oh, you're going to fall behind. You're going to fall behind. Your kid's not good in that sport. Why would he play that? And in saying that, my kids played everything. So when I went through junior high, my son went football, basketball, wrestling, and then to lacrosse. And that's what they did during those seasons. And we really didn't do a lot in the off season. And we pretty much did doing the same thing with my daughter. She went soccer, volleyball, basketball, and lacrosse. And just like, you know, an example for my son, he was the big kid and one coach thought he was a big attack kid, put him on the crease. Another one was, oh, he's a midfielder. Oh, he's a tough physical kid, put a long pole in his hand. Well, by like eighth grade, he got into this face-off thing. And now he was like one of eight kids up at his school, like freshman year. He winds up, he likes it. And now he's got the interest for himself. It's not me saying go practice. He does it by himself. I hear the thing going off in the basement, the little app for the ready, set, go, and the chops and all that, and which is good because you need that self-motivation, not me saying, you know, go do it. So he has a motivation to get better. My daughter, going into eighth grade, and I hear it all the time, nothing against you, Charlie, you know, it's, boy, she's got to get a right hand. She's got to get a right, and I'm sitting, I'm going like, she'll get it eventually, but we just haven't invested a lot of time to say, go work with this one or hey, you just came back from, or you just finished your season, you know, go out there on the wall, or, you know, I took her stick's gone. Her stick won't come out until the tryouts, you know? And like, those are the little things that are like, there's time. It's not a rush. Now, if she's going into her junior year and she doesn't have a right hand, I'm like, oh, okay. But at some point the kids, as they get older, need to, you know, have that intrinsic motivation to get better at that and not force it, you know, and make them feel like, oh, I'm not good. Or, you know, if I don't have, you know, if I can't go righty, I'm not gonna, you know, be good enough out there or something's wrong, you know? So, those are the things when you talk about specialization. And I do see kids, dropping out of like junior high sports or stopping to play. Like my son still plays with his buddies. You know, the PAL basketball, he's doing a summer of basketball, and they go out and have fun. And I see so many kids who, you know, don't do those things anymore, you know, but, you know, there's time to get better.
Yeah, no, I would say even younger. Yeah, no, I would say even younger than junior high, kids are starting to specialize in sports.
Yeah.
And I would also like to take this opportunity to defend myself. I just really tell her to be afraid to use your
right. I didn't say it was you. I know.
Dr. Whitley and then Justin and Rob, go ahead.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I think, you know, a lot of the points were just mentioned really well. I think that a concern with specialization in youth sports, I mean, I think you have the injuries. I think a recent research study just came out suggesting that those who specialize something like have 50% higher injury rates or something like that. And so, I mean, you even think about it in within baseball, right, you're seeing a much higher rate and earlier rate of Tommy John surgeries, right, that they never used to see. And so you're definitely seeing injuries coming from repetitive movements within one sport. You're seeing burnout that's happening more frequently if you're playing the same sport, not just, you know, one or two seasons, but throughout the entire year and only that sport. So you don't have the change up and the time to miss that sport. I think also one thing that sometimes is overlooked when we talk about, you know, the need to diversify in your sports experience versus specialize, I think when you specialize, sometimes the sport that you specialize in can be really difficult to play after high school or college, right? And so, you know, get a whole bunch of people to play certain sports can be really hard. It can be to get that many people together. It can be costly to have access to certain types of equipment or facilities. And so I think that if you specialize in a sport that presents different barriers like that, that can perhaps impact your physically active over your lifespan. And so the different sports that you play and the different physical activities that you engage in, I think enhance the likelihood that you're just going to be someone who's had a hopefully a positive experience in sport, but, you know, knows how to play and is interested in playing and being active in different ways. And hopefully you're more likely to be happier, healthier over your lifespan rather than, you know, just being active during your K through 12 or up through college years, which I think happens quite frequently.
Yeah. Justin, if you can, I know specialization. I mean, me and you have had conversations about this before. What do you feel about specialization and the impact it has on youth sports as a whole and as the kids as an individual?
This may come out more aggressively than I wanted to, but I don't think kids should ever specialize. You know, if you look at any other avenue in life, like I'm, you know, I have a 2-year-old daughter. I would never want her doing just one thing every day. She loves doing puzzles, but if we only showed her puzzles, where's the diversity of the experience? Where's the enrichment? Where's her ability to broaden her horizon? She eats the same food every day. Why? Go to the same park every day. Why? It's too, in my mind, insulating, and it doesn't allow for a young person to be as expansive as they really need to be and should be encouraged to be. So, you know, specialization, especially at the young youth levels, to me is one of the worst things that can happen. That being said, I see the other side of the coin, and it becomes sort of a keeping up with the Joneses, perhaps, or a fear of I don't keep up with the sort of pace of everybody else around me, my son or daughter may not be as successful on the playing field as players whose families have them specialized and invested in that one particular sport year round. But I actually think it's a great disservice to the individual. It goes counter to coaching and teaching and nurturing and cultivating the whole individual, the whole human. And I see it as having a very negative impact. The only time I think specialization should occur is, you know, in adult years. I want my doctors to be specialists. You know, I want, you know, my psychologist to be a specialist in certain arenas. But, you know, for young people, they should be invested in keeping as many doors open for as long as they can keep them open.
Well put. And Justin, you kind of spoke to the point where people feel like they're getting left behind, right? So like a college scholarship may be the goal or something like that. So let's kick it to our college coach. Like Rob, like when you guys recruit, do you want multi-sport athletes?
It's one of the first questions we ask, you know, besides what are your grades like, is, hey, do you play any other sports? And, you know, honestly, one of the biggest turnoffs for us as a coaching staff is if a kid tells us, no, I quit every other sport so I could just play lacrosse year round. You know, I think that if you have a kid that does that, one, you're limiting their athletic IQ. So I know you're approaching this from a health and physical education standpoint. You know, at a young age, if a kid is being told or telling himself or herself that I'm just going to play this one sport, it's all I'm going to focus on, you know, how can they develop, you know, from a physical education standpoint, how can they improve their, like, as I said before, their athletic IQ if they're only doing one thing? You know, that ties into repetitive movement. You know, kid, you look at kids and we play with our college team. We do a lot of stuff in the off season where we play different sports with them. And you can tell, you know, what kids never played another sport growing up in high school. You know, there's not as many as there used to be a few years ago, but we still have some kids. You put them on a basketball court and it's frightening. You put them, you know, you play flag football or soccer and they don't know what's going on. And I think for kids who want to, you know, continue to play sports at a high level, I think if you get to the high school level and you can play multiple sports and learn different skills, and it's a way to stay in shape and it's a way to be experienced to different coaching, I think it makes kids a more well-rounded athlete. And it's also more fun. You know, I think it's fun, you know, for kids to be able to play sports, because, you know, as you know, you get to a point where you can't play sports anymore. You can only play high school football for so long. You can only play Little League baseball for so long. You can only play, you know, basketball for so long before you get to a point where it's over. So why are we going to cut that off earlier than it needs to be? Why not play as many sports for as long as you can until you get to the point where, hey, you're going to get to college. Now you're going to focus on one sport while you're focusing on going to school and getting a degree. You know, why not do that? Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, that makes total sense. And you brought up the physical education piece. And as a physical education teacher, I feel like self-imposed responsibility to do as much as I possibly can to ensure that my kids are physically active when they're not with me. I gave a presentation a couple of years ago, and the title of it was called The Activity Gap. And basically what it was how many minutes of physical activity do kids get when they're with me compared to what the CDC recommends that a child get over the course of an entire calendar year, and then the gap that exists between those two numbers and the amount of minutes that kids actually need when they're not with me to be considered cardiovascularly healthy. So one of the things that I tried to do when I rewrote the curriculum at my school was create a system where every single year, as the kids matriculate from one grade to the next, they're exposed to different things. Like, we play chook ball, we play netball, we play Quidditch, we play all these things that aren't traditional sports. And essentially in the curriculum, traditional sport is really done after eighth grade. You know, sometimes there'll be a volleyball unit in there and a badminton unit. But like, instead of basketball, we'll introduce them to netball, which has, it's similar to basketball, but it's different and it has a different strategy to it. There's different tactics that have to be applied to it, and kids move in a different way. And the reason why I bring that up is because we talk about being active throughout the course of your lifespan. Kind of hinted to it or alluded to it at one point during different parts of our conversation. And Rob, you just said it outright. Like, how long are you going to play football? Right? If that's all you ever did, then you're 30, not even 30, like, high school football's done. You don't play in college. Say you even do play in college, you don't go to the pros. Then what are you going to do if that's all you know how to do? So we talk about being physically active throughout the course of your lifespan and looking at it from a physical education health perspective. Yeah, of course I don't want kids to specialize, because there's he's a good friend of mine. He teaches in North Carolina, and we were talking on Voxer one day, and he said this to the group. He was driving down the road. This was probably 3 years ago. He's older than I am. I'm 35. And he's driving down the road and he sees a game of Ultimate Frisbee going on. There's a bunch of kids playing, college age kids. And he stopped and he said, "Can I play?" And he jumped in the game of Ultimate Frisbee. And when we talk about physical literacy and the ability to be confident and competent in a variety of movement patterns and pathways and different games and everything, he was totally confident and competent to get out of his car, jump in with a bunch of college age kids and play ultimate frisbee. And to me, like as facilitators of youth sport, like that's part of our responsibility to ensure in some way, shape or form that kids are physically literate, that they can go and do these things for the rest of their life. And Dr. Willie, I see you unmuted your microphone, so go ahead.
Yeah, no, I just want to jump in and say also by doing that in your classroom and introducing sports that most wouldn't be familiar with and have all of the specialized training in already, you're also creating a more level playing field, right?
Right.
So in just thinking about the maybe some of the students who haven't had specialized training in basketball or you know, are playing year round or the privatization of youth sports and paying for all this additional coaching and training on the side, you know, by changing that to be netball or by doing Quidditch or by doing these different activities and these different non-traditional sports, you then level that playing field. And so who don't have those skills from years and years of training feel more comfortable in trying and playing and being more active, which is wonderful. Yeah.
And they're having a better overall experience there because the kids who play basketball aren't dominating the game. I may teach a class of 35 kids and have, actually this year I had a class of about 35 kids. I had almost the entire varsity basketball team in it. None of them are varsity soccer players, you know? So we play soccer and guess what? Like you're learning just as much as everybody else is. And you're right. And it does kind of aid in the development of the overall child and gives them a better experience. They're not being dominated. They don't feel out of place, but there's a variety of other factors that could contribute to that, but they might not feel out of place as much as they would have had we been playing X, Y, or Z.
Totally.
So yeah, I totally agree with that.
And you also have an opportunity for maybe those athletes who are typically, you know, successful in the more traditional sports because they played those more to be in environments where maybe they aren't as successful, right? And so they have to learn new sports and kind of learn along with their classmates.
Yeah, totally. And oftentimes it also switches that role, right? So the kid who typically might not be the leader of or leader of a class in different ways, right? Because you're playing the sport that they're used to. Maybe a kid that doesn't necessarily take on that role and can help other kids in the class really took to Quidditch pretty quickly. And now he's teaching the quarterback of the football team how to be better at Quidditch and, you know, fuels him and fills his bucket or her bucket a little bit in that way also. So,
totally.
I want to bring this up. And I know John left us a little while ago. And one of my favorite quotes from John is when he talks about the car ride home. And he says, when your child gets in the car, the first words out of your mouth should be, I love watching you play. And then you could talk, if it was a great experience that they just had, you could talk about that and build upon that a little bit. But especially if maybe they didn't play well or their team lost, like, don't take that opportunity to jump on them more or try to coach them in the car ride home. Like just say, I love watching you play. And what I really want to talk about is we see on YouTube, like parents fighting with each other in the stands and parents like jumping referees at their car and all the craziness that occurs in youth sports. And then we have this guy that is almost like the poster guy for all of this being enabled by people and giving a platform by ESPN, and like Adidas allowed him to bully a female official and got her removed from a game that he was coaching in because he disagreed with her. So kind of using LeVar Ball as the example of what's wrong with youth sports or talking about him specifically, like what can be done, what needs to be done? How did this get so far out of control? Like, how do we change that part of it? How do we change that culture? And John kind of alluded to a little bit before, right? Like have conversations with the parents in your program and have like a motto and a goal and expectations for your program and things of that nature. But LeVar Ball parents, like what's happening and how do we get a hold of or a grip on what's happening with the culture? Anybody?
I think the LeVar Ball thing, I think, you know, people are going to watch that. Because to the average person who's, you know, scrolling through Twitter or Instagram or going online, I mean, it's headline grabbing, it's attention grabbing. People are going to watch, you know, they're into that kind of voyeuristic element of watching someone who's completely unhinged say whatever he wants to say. You know, and obviously he has a large platform you know, being, you know, having his son where his son is at and being in that media market. So I don't know how we as coaches can handle LeVar Ball, but I think for, you know, for ourselves, it's just, you know, if there is a parent that's getting out of hand, you know, trying to have a, you know, a constructive conversation. And again, I think it might not be in the heat of the moment. I think you might, you know, I think cooler heads have to prevail. But I think it is, you know, and that could be a core value if you're coaching a team, is something that you, you have a conversation with the kids and the parents. Hey, this is, you know, attitudes and behaviors that, that won't be tolerated, because that, you know, the referee kind of waving you off, you know, these referees, you know, they're a big part of the game. You need refs to, you know, to have these games and have tournaments, and these refs get treated horribly. And, you know, it gets to the point where their initial reaction is to be defensive, where you're asking, hey, can I get clarification? And they're defensive, they're combative. And that, you know, that's kind of, that's a learned trait. You know, they're learning that from getting abused day in and day out by coaches and by parents. You know, so I think that's where that comes from. And, you know, that, that might be a little harder to correct just because they're just, they're getting abused as much as they are. But I think, you know, kind of outlining it and, you know, having, like you mentioned, we talked about before, the core values piece of just, hey, this is how we're going to run our program. We're going to, you know, we're going to be professional about things. We're not going to, you know, have those conversations. We're not going to yell from the stands. Everything's going to, we're going to encourage positivity and kind of get away from the negative critiques, you know, without any constructive advice.
Yeah, agreed.
If I could jump in there, Charlie, like you look at these things with, you know, with LeVar Ball, and it's almost like we're a reality TV series, you know, real world like situations. Like he's getting publicity. You got this Friday Night Tykes, you know, TV show out there, and people see that with the youth football, and it's like nothing's done about it. Like nothing's done about it. And now you go into your own situation, coach in high school or youth league, and it's almost like it's 2 hours to, and it could be anything. It could be a Jet game, Giant game, Yankee game, but whatever. It's like 2 hours. I could say and do whatever I want. And then when the game's over, you know, I could go rant and rave on the sideline and, you know, oh, why are you putting that kid in? What's that kid? Oh, that's what? And then, you know, the game's over and go, hey, Charlie, what's happening? How things going? You know, it's like they totally forget. Like they just get caught up in this I don't know, this sports, do whatever I want, you know, world. And I sit there. I you know, I now kind of remove myself where I sit by myself, because it's just amazing what people could say about people's kids with the parent next to them or the coach. And then, you know, 2 minutes later, it's great. And then just forget about it, you know, when the game's over, and just be the nicest guy in the world, the nicest mom in the world. And, you know, and all of a sudden the game starts, it's like, whoa, you know. But, you know, I think it's just become, it's become accepted. And I think people see it more and more on TV, and you never see anything done about it. You'll never see anything done about it. You know, it's just kind of like, wow, that's out there. That's terrible. And there's never any, well, what's going to happen? You know?
Yeah. I mean, how, what, our kids see it too, right? Our kids see it. Our kids hear it.
We're seeing the parent at my games. It's just, it's just amazing what they feel they can blurt out and, you know, have no shame about it.
Yeah. So how do we feel like, Justin Meredith, how do we feel like that? The kids are part of this environment. They see all this craziness going on. How do they internalize it? How does it change anything about their approach to sports and their feelings on of the sports when they see, you know, maybe their mom and dad or somebody's mom and dad totally out of control?
Well, I think it just adds a toxic ingredient to the whole atmosphere and environment. And I kind of mentioned it before. You know, if it happens to be their own parent in the stands that's, you know, hooting and hollering and saying things that are, you know, obnoxious or uncouth or offensive, the kids are attuned to that. They know that. And I honestly believe it bothers some of them. I've seen players melt down on the field when they're playing on the side where their parents stand. So in lacrosse, you know, where the sides of the field switch. If they're on the side where their parent has closer proximity to them, their game goes away from them. So they're clearly bothered by what's being said or just the presence. And going back to like what that line that you love from John, where, you know, you say to your child, "I love watching you play." That to me is such a beautiful sentiment, because again, it's not the sentiment of love and affection and value isn't contingent upon how the person performed. It's just that he's out there, he's competing. He could be standing still on the field. Just the fact that he's between those lines, or even on the sideline, just cheering on his fellow teammates, whatever it might be, that's where the value is. I would even go a step further. He gets in the car, say, "Do you want meatloaf or chicken?" and just leave the game aside completely. But, the parents that lose their control, I think it does create like this really toxic environment that affects everybody negatively. It can have a positive impact in any way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just to follow up on that, I mean, I think a lot of really good points have been said, and so I'm not going to, harp on those. But I think that just at the end of the day, it takes the focus away from the kids, right? And so I think that's what the coaches are there for, and that's what the parents should be there for, and that's what we're doing is the focus should be on the kids and their experience, and as someone mentioned earlier, just helping them feel valued and get value out of that experience. And so I think that's that's what happens.
This is my last question, and I would like each one of you to just chime in quickly, because it's a fairly simply stated question. Are our kids losing the opportunity, through everything that we talked about and other factors as well, to truly play? Or are they just merely participating in sport and on teams? Are they truly out there? Because we say, "Oh, I play lacrosse, I play football." I guess you don't play wrestling, but I wrestle. Have they lost the opportunity to truly play?
I mean, just to jump in quickly, I would say not all, but I think many, yes. I think that, a lot of the sport environments now are very much adult dominated, especially earlier when perhaps they don't need to be in the elementary age. And I think that youth are in very organized, adult-dominated sport programs, and they aren't getting their opportunity to, A, just play and not be in these organized settings, and then B, within the settings, within the youth sport programs, that it's not about fun and enjoyment and passion and learning together, but it starts to feel like work.
I think that point that Meredith has just made about sort of like unstructured play, the opportunity to just go out there and not have it be adult centered with, not have a coach there all the time, is definitely something that's being lost. And, that affects the kid probably most clearly, in my opinion, in his ability even to just resolve conflicts. You don't have the adult supervision, you don't have the authority figure there where you turn and you look to that individual to be the adult, and to solve the conflicts on the field, the arguments that arise. And, again, that's detrimental. So opportunities for unstructured play seem to, be falling by the wayside and being replaced by all this structured play. And, I don't know what the cause of that is. I don't know if it's, the parents are frightened to just allow their kids to go down to the neighborhood park and just play without any kind of supervision, or just nobody's doing it. So the one individual that wants to go down there and, get a pickup game of basketball can't, because everybody else is at an AAU tournament. So,
Chris?
Yeah, I'll just jump in there and, I'll give you the example of, like, you know, the one thing now, my son still, he plays at the PAO basketball with his buddies. And yes, we sign him up, and it's got to be somebody there. But we just go watch. They make their own lineups. They go play. You know, they do different things. They put the headbands on. They get, you know, so they're just having fun. They're playing. You know, no one really cares winning or losing. But going back to what was just said, we had, and I saw this with my son. He wasn't in the travel lacrosse yet. Summer of sixth grade going into seventh. And I'll never forget, a bunch of kids were out playing tournaments and, you know, baseball, lacrosse, and there was really nobody around. You know, like, we went down to the beach and we came back, the kids came home, and our house is it's pretty good for the kids. You know, we have the pool, we have a big yard, you have the trampoline, you have everything you need to run around. And the kids came back and they were just sitting in our house. And I'm like, guys, you want to go in the pool? You want to go? And they were just so tired that it was almost like the last thing they wanted to do was go play. You know, and it was kind of like a wow moment, like, wow, they're 12, 13 years old and they're tired, you know, and they don't want to go have fun. They just want to sit in here and watch TV. You know, it was a little eye opener right there to, you know, maybe sometimes you need that time to just let them go be kids and forget about the sports, you know.
Yeah.
I think, you know, being around youth teams and going to practices and running practices and going to tournaments, you know, I think honestly some of the most fun that kids have is outside of practice and competition when they're just being kids themselves. You know, I think of, you know, after a practice, you know, we have a practice on a football field, there's uprights, the kids are doing a ball hunt, you know, what does that turn into? Who can throw the lacrosse ball through the uprights from 50 yards away? Who can throw it the furthest? Who could throw the ball into a trash can? You know, it turns into their own little game that they make up outside of adults, outside of coaches, and they're having a good time. You know, you think about kids, you know, we're on these travel tournaments that are a little bit further away. They stay in the hotel. What are they doing, you know, when they're in the hotel playing with each other? They're in the hallways playing knee hockey or something like that. You know, what are they doing at the tournament, you know, when they're not playing games and they have some downtime? You know, they're playing some variation of lacrosse. You know, they have a net out there, they're doing something. It's not lacrosse per se in the fact that it's 10-on-10, but they got the sticks in their hand, they're running around, they're playing, they're engaged. But I think most importantly, they're having fun. They're having fun the whole time that they're doing that stuff. And it's outside of the structured environment that I think so many parents and coaches and, you know, adults are trying to, like, push kids into this structured environment where they're getting individualized training, or they're in a team and they're in a team setting. The kids are just having fun. You know, that's kind of what they revert to. That's innate almost, where they want to have a good time. They want to play with their friends. How do they do that? You know, and I think that is, you know, next time you're at a tournament, you're at something, watch and see what the kids are doing outside of when they're playing and competing in games. Watch what they're doing before and after practice. You know, most of the time they're doing something. They're having some form of competition that they've created on their own. You know, so I think it's there. You know, I think it has to be more encouraged. I think as adults and coaches, we have to realize that, hey, this is something that's good for them. This is something that makes them happy. They're moving around. They're physically active, and they're working with each other. They're working out they're working out issues. They're resolving things. They're creative in terms of making up their own little competitions. I think those are all good things, and I think, you know, they have to be encouraged more than they currently are. You know, but it's an opportunity for unstructured play, 100%.
Yeah, and I'd say kids or coaches need to facilitate experiment within their little structured world there, like find times in practice and stuff. But yeah, so like Rob, you talked about like watch them at tournaments and stuff. I can tell you, like, my kids, like, they dance, you know, like whether it's my varsity kids, my travel kids, They dance. That's kind of what they love to do. But hey, look, I love stuff like this. I love having conversations with people that have great things to share. But we've been talking for a long time. So I said that was the last question. We're going to wrap it up. I want to thank everybody for being on. You have no idea how much I appreciate it. Some of you I've known for a little while. One of you I just kind of met officially tonight. But I appreciate you for saying yes and coming on here and taking some of your time to help me put this episode together and help the people out there listening to this episode maybe alter some of the things that they do in their approach to either being a coach or a parent or a facilitator of youth sport and activity in some way, shape, or form. So thank you, everybody. And be a follow-up or a part two to this conversation. And if you want to be part of that, obviously, just let me know. So thanks, everybody.
Charlie, thank you. I love watching you play, Charlie.
Right. Thanks, Charlie. Thanks, everyone. Great conversation.
Thank you. Good night.
Have a good night, everyone. Good night.
Well, I got to be honest. I got to say I'm so glad that I got this episode done and that everybody that was on the panel said yes. I learned so much talking to these people. We cut this conversation way down. I mean, part one and part two of the podcast both were shortened by at least 10 to 15 minutes each because we just had so much to talk about that night that we connected through Google Hangouts. I do want to go back to one part of the podcast that I cut a chunk out of. It's really the only part of the podcast that we really spoke about physical education specifically. And to all my PE teachers out there listening, when we were talking about cutting traditional sport out, I mentioned that traditional sports in our curriculum at my school stops pretty much at eighth grade. And to a large extent, that is true. But I clarified in a soundbite that I pulled out of the episode. But we do still play traditional sports in the high school. I think I mentioned that we do play volleyball and badminton. And we have those units in there from time to time, depending on the year and things of that nature. But we also use a lot of traditional sports as lead-ins to non-traditional games. And we do have some traditional sport units from time to time, depending on, you know, availability of space and what traditional sport we want to throw in as a unit and what we want to do with it. Oftentimes with me, traditional sports take on a sport education model look and things of that nature. So there are still traditional sports in there because, you know, even if the kids have played it a few times, there's still a lot of different things that you could do within one of those units to make the learning new if the activity necessarily isn't brand new for them. But we do try to introduce them to a wide array of new activities at the high school level constantly through 9th, 10th, 11th, and 12th grade. So I have some contact information for all of you for our guests. So John O'Sullivan, he wasn't on part two. We had some technical difficulties when we kicked off the hangout, and he had to leave us in the middle of part one. But you can find his website at changingthegameproject.com. You could find him on Twitter at CTG Project HQ, so Changing the Game Project Headquarters, CTG Project HQ. He wrote two books, one of them called Changing the Game, A Parent's Guide to Raising Happy, High-Performing Athletes and Giving Youth Sports Back to Our Kids. And he wrote Is It Wise to Specialize? He also has a podcast that he mentioned called The Way of Champions, and I strongly suggest you subscribe to that. Dr. Meredith Whitley, professor at Adelphi University. You could find her on Twitter at Dr. Whitley. We had Coach Rob Cornetta on from Pace University. You could find him on Twitter at Coach Cornetta. Obviously, Coach Taylor from St. Anthony's was on, and Coach Shepherd from Harborfield was on. If you want to get in touch with either one of those fine gentlemen, you could just reach out to me, and I could get you in touch with either one of them with whatever questions you may have. So my plan going forward is this. I'm going to try to do a follow-up episode from this episode. And at the end of every episode that we have, I urge people to get in touch with me. And I'm going to do that again right now in a slightly different way. Obviously, if you have something great that you want to share and you want to be on the podcast, let me know. But what I want to do is I want to do a follow-up episode, see if we could get some of the panelists that missed out on our original conversation that you just listened to. We were supposed to have a few other people on. One of them had a last-minute emergency, and the other ones had some technical difficulties. But we were supposed to have a couple of other people on this episode. So my plan is to do a follow-up episode, invite those people that missed out on, and see if John wants to come back or anybody from today's panel wants to come back, and invite anybody out there that coaches or works with kids in any capacity on, and almost have a roundtable conversation. I would really love to remove myself from it as much as possible, if not totally, and just allow our panelists and whoever else wants to come on as a coach to really ask the questions of the panelists, just sit down and, well, digitally sit down and have a conversation about what was discussed in these episodes, about what you struggle with as a coach. Ask some of our panelists different ways that you can approach different issues that you have within your team, whether it be picking captains or turmoil with inside your group or dealing with parents or dealing with kids who want to specialize. And as a coach trying to push your own players to go and play other sports outside of your season, whatever it may be, I would really love to do that. So I'm going to push that out on Twitter. I'm going to throw it in some Voxer groups, see if we could get some people on that would want to serve the podcast as coaches and people searching for information, and really just have a nice roundtable conversation. And like I said, I'm going to try to remove myself completely from it. So look for that. As always, you could get in touch with me on Twitter. You could find me at RizzutoEd. On Voxer, you could find me at Charlie Rizzuto, profile ID Rizzuto Ed. You could email me, RizzutoEducation@gmail.com, and you could find this podcast on Facebook. Remember, everybody, until next time, it is health that is true wealth, not pieces of gold and silver.